Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Sorry. Hey guys, welcome to this fun episode of TFL Talking Cars. And today, instead of Tommy, I've got my man Nathan. Hi Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm good. Can you guys tell the difference? Tommy and I are almost identical, but yeah.
A little bit older and a little bit heavier, Nathan.
No, he's not.
And today, guys, we're going to be talking about the top 10 future collectibles. These are cars that we would buy if we had an unlimited budget. If we were doing like stupid rich reviews, well, these are actually affordable. Like,
yeah, actually, most of these are. As a matter of fact, we've actually owned a few of these.
Yeah. And actually, we own one right now. So some of them are stupid rich, some of them are affordable. So buckle up if you're driving, if you're running along, keep running. And the next edition of TFL Talking Cars is coming up right after this intro. Sit back and relax, or keep driving if you're driving. TFL Talking Cars is on the air, the world's most popular car podcast. Okay, maybe not yet, but we're working on it. All right, Nathan, let's get right to it. What's number 10? And this is one we certainly drove.
It is one we drove. Now, guys, take yourselves back to almost 11 years ago. Roman and I, one of our earliest videos together was with this car, and it's the Tesla Roadster.
Yeah, produced from 2008 to 2012, costing anywhere from, well, about $112,000 to $150,000 when it was new. It was, you know, basically hybrid, not that it was gas and electric, but that it wasn't completely built by Tesla.
No, it had a Lotus body, basically, from a lease. And the thing about that car was it was Tesla's first step into a much larger world. It wasn't so much the car design, it was the powertrain that was important.
Yeah, it was kind of a proof of concept for Tesla. So what happened was, we can tell the story, right?
Sure.
Elon's brother, Kimball Musk, lives here in Boulder, Elon wanted a store. So they got this deal where they could actually open up a store on the Pearl Street Mall. And the state of Colorado gave them a, if I recall right, a $42,000 tax credit, not deductible, credit.
Right.
On the car, on any Tesla that was bought before the end of the year. And the only Tesla that they were selling at that time, of course, was the Roadster. And I think it was going for like $150,000. Right now, they're actually, according to eBay at least, they're right around the $60,000 to $70,000 range. But you know what? It's like buying the Model T, right? It's if Tesla, which we think will happen, will become an iconic company, the very first one will become valuable.
It may. Now, bear in mind, there were a couple different versions of the Roadster. There was one that had a 2-speed automatic transmission to it, sort of automatic, and then there was the 1-speed, basically. Very different cars. We drove one.
In the snow.
In the snow with
Estes Park.
With racing tires on it, street tires on it, and barely maintained control. That was a crazy drive.
That was terrifying, and we barely fit. I mean, the car is tiny.
And I was smaller then, and Roman and I still, you know, we basically, our armpit hair intertwined.
I want to say they built something like just over 2,000 of them, and they managed to sell like 1,800. So production is really low. And I was talking to, when we bought our recent Model Y, I was talking to our saleswoman, and she said that when they bring a Tesla Roadster in at a trade-in, that Tesla actually takes the car and then tears it apart for parts.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would make sense, because there's so few of them made, right? And, you know, it's kind of cool, because aside from the fact that we got to drive way back, early on, and got to really drive one, I've driven one on the track, and they're really heavy. Not the easiest car to drive on the track, but they're very, very quick. And
I want to say it was like, what, in the 3-some-second range, 0 to 60, it was quick.
Yeah, and that battery pack size was, what, half the size of the one that came later in the S?
Yeah, there are some issues with buying one now. You can get them. I don't think Tesla actually supports them anymore in terms of the charging ability, so I'm not sure about this, but I'm going to guess that you can't actually take it to a supercharger. It won't work with the latest tech. So, you know, you're buying legacy software, basically, right?
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem with it. But I think at some point, give it another 20 years, if Tesla owns, the electric car world, then those 1,800 initial Roadsters are going to be very valuable. Because, look, 1,800 sold. How many are left? You know, I don't know. Less than half, maybe.
Oh, I guarantee you, a few of them have been crunched. Yeah. By drivers.
Or, turned in and then taken apart for parts. I know there's a guy who used to work on them on the West Coast. I want to say it's in Oregon or Washington that now actually specializes in fixing them. I've seen some videos. And the cool thing about these vehicles is that a lot of relatively like famous business people and movie stars and such bought them because that was that initial like Tesla love affair
that was their initial investment, so that brought in popularity and money into the company.
Yeah, the rich and famous bought these things.
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
and so they still have them. And let's face it, they're good-looking cars. The Lotus Elise was a good-looking car.
Yes, it is. And it's named after my wife, which is awesome, because that is a good-looking woman. She doesn't watch any of my videos anyway.
She should.
That was a wasted compliment.
Look at your man. Lovingly giving her a compliment.
But the thing is about that car, and keep this in mind, guys. Yes, it looks like an Elise, but they actually did some things to make it look a little bit different on the outside as well. And there were unique models also on top of that, unique colors, and some unique trim options. So they're not all exactly at the same price. Some of they had more advanced traction systems and higher end tires and suspension systems, and all of that stuff is
remember,
still.
Remember the size of that little screen? Remember the Tesla screens are like this now?
Oh, yeah, it was.
It was like the size of like your watch.
And it had like 3 buttons, and if I recall, like a couple of different colors of lights in there. Yeah. And, I wasn't all that impressed with the way they laid out the interior, but the bottom line is that this is Genesis. This was the beginning of what is now one of the most popular car companies in the world. In some ways, one of the more prolific ones, but also it could be a legendary car company in 20 years.
Yeah, it also had a Target top, right? You could take the top off.
Yeah, top, it wouldn't work with us because there's no way we could sit in that car with that top on.
Yeah, that was a problem.
Yeah, especially in the ice and cold. That was fun.
All right.
Let's move on.
Number 9, we actually recently purchased. It's up on TFL Classics. It's a first generation Audi TT, kind of the poster child for what I'm calling Bauhaus design, right?
Actually, that's what they call it. Yeah, Bauhaus.
Yeah. The kind of very minimalist German design. Why is it special, Nathan? Well, it's Audi's first Roadster. And, of course, it's a Roadster that comes in all-wheel drive, which is, very unique. Most convertibles do not come in all-wheel drive. There's only a handful of them that you can count.
Yeah.
Right? We could probably count them. So there's probably that one. I don't know. Does the Q5 come convertible as an all-wheel drive?
I don't know about the Q5, but I know BMW's had all-wheel drive versions of their convertibles, but not their Roadsters.
But not back in 1998 to 2006.
No, there was just a couple, so I don't think back then that the...
And you could get that the Mitsubishi Murano, remember that? That came as a convertible.
The Nissan Murano.
The Nissan Murano, yeah.
Cross, godforsaken,
horrible.
Yeah, it was a Murano convertible. And it was...
That was all-wheel drive.
What a miserable car that was. But he built it for his wife.
But anyway, let's get back to... Yeah, Carlos built it for his wife. These cost anywhere from $6,000 to $13,000. And they're design icons, dude. They're just really cool.
I will agree with you there 100% because the design was... When they came out, this was when Audi was kicking butt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
This was when Audi was like the epitome of sexiness.
Yeah, and they were doing stuff that nobody else was doing.
Yep.
They weren't trying to follow a trend, they were establishing a trend. And by building this vehicle, which at the time was inherently unstable until they added that little spoiler to the back of it. Remember, they had to do a recall and add a spoiler to it. These cars were just completely unique, had one of the coolest interiors I've ever seen. The one that we bought actually has that interior. It's a baseball mitt style design, and it's freaking awesome. And it's very comfortable, too.
Yeah, and then there's a weird thing that first of all, they're built as both coupes and convertibles, right?
Right.
So you can get them as both coupes and convertibles. Ours has the 1.8 liter turbo.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a naturally aspirated. The way you can tell them apart is the bigger engine, the turbo, actually has two exhaust pipes.
Right.
The smaller engine has a single exhaust pipe, so from the back you can tell which is which.
The single exhaust ones are really rare.
I want to say the single exhaust initially weren't available in all-wheel drive. You had to get the turbocharged one. And basically, you know, underneath it's a GTI platform.
It's like a GTI platform.
Yeah. Engine.
Yeah, and they changed some of the components on it, but really they do share a lot of parts. But that was smart back then because it made it a little bit more obtainable. It did go up against the 911 in terms of sales. Some people cross-shopped them, even though the 911 is a far more, you know, drivable vehicle in terms of hardcore drivers. But the TT was so unique and so special, and everybody in LA wanted one.
So here's the secret, Nathan.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going to get one of these, you know, you were talking about the fact that the initial models, the early models, they would flip over on the Autobahn because they weren't stable.
They're a little unstable, yeah.
Yeah, and so what Audi had to do was retrofit. Initially, they retrofitted a spoiler on the back, mm-hmm. and then it came from the factory.
Right.
So if you had bought one, you could take it to your Audi dealer, and they would, you know, put the spoiler on. Or if you bought a later one, it would actually come with a spoiler. So the ones that people, which ones do you think are the most valuable out of all the
products? All the ones that don't have the spoiler.
Exactly.
All.
Yeah. If you can find one of the original ones where the spoiler was either not retrofitted or didn't come from the factory,
or they deleted it and they pulled it off themselves, possibly.
Well, then you'd have holes.
But
the ones that really people want are the very first models that came without a spoiler and never had it added.
The more dangerous, the better.
Yeah, well, the more scarce, the better. And ours is kind of that really cool, what would you call that color?
It's the pewter silver?
Yeah, it's kind of, there's a name for it. It's kind of,
Heimlich silver?
No. It's
Gustav?
It's kind of grayish. You know, it looks like lead, like the lead in a pencil, right?
Mm.
And that, in combination with actually the leather baseball glove, is really sought after.
They have a green and a blue color that are also absolutely fabulous on that car.
Now, keep in mind, those cars do need to have their belts changed.
Yeah, 60,000?
Yeah, and if you don't, it's an interference engine, and if you don't, you will grenade the entire engine. So if you're looking for one, make sure that the timing belt has been changed. It's mm-hmm. a big job.
It's an expensive job.
It's like $2,500, but if you don't do it, and that's the problem. You got a car that's worth potentially $6,000. Who wants to put $2,500 into it? So a lot of people just let it go, and if you do let it go, and if it does break, with an interference engine, basically the pistons and the valves and the rods will eat themselves alive.
Let's try to avoid that, Roman.
All right, number eight.
Yeah, number eight is the Mini Cooper and Mini Coupe Cooper and the Roadster. Now, these were built between 2012 and 2015.
Not that long ago. Nope.
And we've driven both versions of it. Actually, a variety of different versions of those versions. And I can tell you, without a doubt, especially with the Coupe, it's one of the worst driving cars I've ever driven. It's absolutely, and I love Minis.
If you have fillings, you won't after you drive it.
There's a reason why my kids stopped coming after I drove that. The thing is that it's a rough riding car.
Especially with a sport suspension.
Especially with that sport suspension. You can't see out of it with that weird roof thing. They wanted it to look like a baseball hat.
Baseball reversed. Hat backwards, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, and then the Roadster, of course, is a convertible.
Yeah, and the convertible's better.
Yeah.
It makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot more sense. But yeah, the bottom line is these are both two-seat vehicles. They don't really make much sense for existence because there's a four-seat version of both of those cars basically, and they make more sense and they handle about the same without the crappy ride.
Yeah, so the Coupe sells for between 9 and 15 and the Roadster between 13 and 16. Obviously, you know, I love a lot of these things so far have one thing in common, that they're all convertibles, and convertibles are highly collectible because they're not used as daily drivers and people use them as, you know, fun toys or weekend vehicles.
And they're not built as often either. The numbers are much, much smaller in terms of production.
Yeah, and then Mini kind of got the engine right in 2012. Earlier versions of that car had problems with Well, all kinds of problems. Fuel pump, high pressure fuel pumps. Tommy has one that he just had replaced. It was the pump itself was $600.
Jeez.
Yeah, just for the fuel. And you can't get like the aftermarket pump because the car will eat it alive. So you can get the first aftermarket pump and you'll get another one a month from now. So you got to go with the, I think it's a Bosch. I think you have to go with the original, which is like $600. But anyway, they sorted that out by 2012 and they didn't sell a lot of them.
No, they didn't, for good reason. It just didn't make much sense. But, well, they really didn't. I mean, you're not getting a much of a performance increase, even though the car was slightly lighter and slightly smaller in some ways, over the regular Mini Cooper.
Yeah, you know, scarcity equals collectability. And once again, keep in mind, these are future collectibles. So these are cars that have depreciated. This is a time to buy them. Don't expect us to come up with cars that are already very collectible and very expensive.
These we know that the AC Cobra is very collectible, but that's not going to be on this list. These are modern collectibles.
Modern collectibles. All right, number seven, Nathan.
Number seven is a car I happen to love, by the way.
Beautiful car.
Yeah, I got a great story about it.
Yeah.
And that's the Jaguar F-Type. It was produced from 2013, basically to current day, although a lot of differences.
The spiritual successor to the E-Type.
Basically,
yeah.
In terms of its overall form and function.
EF.
Cullen was one of the initial designers on this car, and he does amazing work, and he's worked with Aston Martin. Some models were available with a manual transmission.
Murray Cullen, right?
Huh?
There's two brothers.
Yeah, I know.
One's a Ford, and why are we going to
it's the cooler one.
Okay, the two Jaguars, not Ford.
Yeah, it's the cooler. Whichever one is the cooler one did this one. But he's the same one who also did the Alfa Romeo.
Yeah, I think Murray is in Ford. It's the other Cullen.
Who's a cool guy, too, but this is a cooler guy. Okay, anyway, you could get a manual transmission with up to 500 horsepower V8 engine. They're really, really, really rare, but they're really, really, really cool. And right now, you can get them in the low 30s for the used V6 F-Type S model, and all the way to over $123,000 for the F-Type SVR.
Yeah, you know, when the car came out, I was so stunned by its beauty that I decided to do this video where I drove it up to Loveland Pass, and I was just trying to show it off in the mountains.
Was that the white one?
I think it was the white one.
White
And it was a spectacular car that my video didn't do justice to, but it did sound fabulous. The thing about the car for me, Nathan, is there's like a little indent in the seat, and it always hits me right like where my spine, attaches to my skull.
That's because you're abnormally tall.
And it's super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So as much as I love the car, I can't spend more than it feels like somebody's poking me in the back of the neck the whole time I'm driving it. And that may be a very specific thing to Roman, but that's really what's keeping me from buying it. I think actually the coupe is more sexy than the convertible, right?
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Just a sexy car.
Yeah, and then
can't see out of it.
No. And then of course you can tell the 6 from the 8. By the exhaust, right? Mm-hmm. The 6 has a dual exhaust in the center. The 8 has them coming out the side. The other thing that was really cool about it was they did the thing where they squirted gasoline into the exhaust, so you got that kind of
crackle
and burble part of it.
Oh, yeah.
The interior was, the interior was kind of as sexy as the exterior was. The interior was a little plain Jane, if you recall.
I thought it was pretty.
It was pretty. It had these
wasn't
little toggle
all that,
switches.
It didn't knock me out, but I have a story for you in a minute.
And then I got to they actually built a four-cylinder turbo, if you recall. And I actually got to take that on the track. And I got to tell you, Nathan, I've driven the 4, the 8, and the 6, and the 4 was my favorite, just because you could feel how light it is.
That was the F-Type, right, with the manual transmission?
Yeah. On the track, I drove it in Europe, it's least powerful, but it's also the lightest, and it takes what is basically a grand tour, right, and turns into a sports car, because the V8 is definitely a grand tour, the 6 also, but that four-cylinder, really lively, not super powerful, but really tossable.
Yeah, I may have screwed up earlier, guys, when I said that there was a 500-plus horsepower V8 and an option for a manual transmission. They didn't come together, which is a real shame, because could you imagine that car with that big beefy V8 and the manual? Now, quick story. That is one of the few cars that actually made me look attractive to the ladies. No, it's true. I was in Morrison, Colorado. That's by Red Rocks, where they do a lot of concerts and whatnot. I was driving the car, and it was the white one, and I parked outside this Mexican restaurant. We've been there before. You know, and I this lady who, I want to be politically correct in terms of describing someone who is closer to your age now.
A cougar.
Yes, a cougar next to a jag. And she was extremely interested. I was not dressed like an idiot like I normally am either. I was actually wearing
a suit. These are our TFL shirts. If you guys want one, click on the link below and help support us. You won't look like an idiot.
No, but the point is that I was wearing, you know, a sports jacket and a tie.
Dude, I figured out something.
Yeah.
You know, over the last 10 years, we've driven a lot of really kind of sexy and expensive, you know, McLarens, Bentleys, all this crap. None of them compare to having the ladies pay attention to you like a puppy does.
And this was one of the few cases that actually happened. I've driven Lamborghinis and they've not looked at me, but this was, and she, yeah, it was a great experience. It lasted 10 seconds for me just to say, yeah, I lied. I said, yeah, it's mine.
So I would say if you really want, you know, the attention of the opposite sex, get yourself a puppy.
On both sides of it too, because I think guys think it's sexy, women think it's sexy.
We just got a new puppy, right?
Yeah.
And like, it's like incredible. I mean, you know, bring the little guy out, Blaze, and
bring the puppy and bring the, yeah.
And they just swarm.
Well, if you do both of those,
then, oh my God, you're gonna,
we can marry off half of our video staff.
You're gonna be James Bond.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It really does make you feel like James
Bond.
Let's move on to another sexy car, and that's the one behind me.
This is the one that I always thought about buying, because when I first saw it, I thought, oh my God, this thing is so sexy. Maybe because I went to the intro of it in Hollywood, and when I got to the hotel, it was this beautiful Hollywood hotel, just off of Sunset, right? Mm-hmm. And this woman got out with like high heels and gorgeous legs, and I thought, wow, this is the car that Ford should have designed, but it wasn't. It was designed by Heinrich Fisker, and we're talking about the Fisker Karma.
Yes, we are.
Now, 2011 to 2012, only 2 years.
Yeah, it was a beautiful failure.
That's a good way to put it, for lack of a better word.
I mean, it really, this car was, in terms of its exterior design, unique. You have to admit, even if you don't like the long, graceful lines or whatever, the long hood, you got to admit, it is a unique design. No other car looked like this car. But you know what the biggest problem was, Roman? The looks never matched the performance.
Yeah, it had a weird little GM.
It was a hybrid, basically. Yeah.
So I think it was an Ecotec, right? It was the one that they put in the Polaris. I think it was the same engine. Produced like 200 horsepower. And then, of course, it had a battery. The cool thing about the Fisker, of course, was that it was eco chic, right?
So big time.
There was a lot of, like, it had a solar panel in the roof, so it would charge up the battery, which, you know, that power is not big enough to charge anything.
But it's like 2% over 24 hours.
The interior had like
reclaimed beech wood.
Yeah,
and stuff like that.
No, it was
and firewood. Firewood.
It was reclaimed
like
wood from like that sat in the bottom of the Great Lakes for like.
Or from a California forest fire too. They had like five different versions.
Yeah, they were like five different.
And you could, is a boutique car, so you could order a certain type of fake leather with this wood and this, you know, all this.
Yeah, and the car right now, they're going for about 35,000 to 45,000. You see them mostly in California.
Well, there was a problem with those cars. Some of them had some issues with water.
Well, no. They didn't have issues. What happened was they were built in Finland.
Yeah.
And then they were shipped to New Jersey, and then whatever that big hurricane that was came along.
Sallier.
Yeah, yeah. And it basically dropped all the cars, and that was the end of Fisker. The other problem, of course, was that the car had a battery pack made by a company specifically for the Fisker. I think it was called ABC, if I recall. And that company is out of business. So if those batteries get bricked, you're pretty much bricking the whole car. Even though it has a gas engine, I think the two need to work together.
There are a couple aftermarket companies that will support Karma upgrades, so I've heard. And Karma is not only back in business, but there's a few different versions of Karma out there.
Yeah, it was bought by a Chinese company, but it's no longer the same. They bought the design.
Yeah, they bought the design, but
and they stuffed an LS in it.
Right, and then Heinrich Fisker himself is actually doing another Fisker company where he's building the, is it a Pacific?
I don't know what Heinrich's up to.
Anyway, it's a crossover SUV, all electric one. We've actually covered it on TFLcar.com.
But those were kind of the heydays of new car company starting up, right? There was a lot of, you know, it was him and Tesla, of course.
There was another company that took these cars and threw a Corvette engine in them.
Yeah, that was, what's his name, Bob Lutz.
Bob Lutz did that.
Yeah, LS
because
Lopper.
He agreed with me. He said, you know, this is such a gorgeous car. It needs more power.
It had a little bit of a mustache look. It looked like a villain, like a Dudley Dastardly.
Yeah,
remember
yeah,
him?
Dastardly, you know.
Yeah, it had that kind of look. That.
Drat!
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, but like I say, they're out there. Like I said,
they're cheap.
Yeah, and they also had this like really funky infotainment system, which was kind of, you know, Tesla before Tesla. It's super slow, but it's kind of funky. I remember driving it. It also came with 22s. It was the first production car to come from the factory with 22s.
Yeah, and it looked like a concept car partially because of that. I mean, yeah. and even though I can't stand large wheels, they look really good on this car.
They did.
Let's talk about a much more affordable collectible.
Yeah, another car that is really at its bottom right now. Actually, I just saw a Wheeler Dealers with this car. What am I talking about?
You're talking about the Saab 9-3 Vigan or Aero, or Vegan and Aero.
Yeah, these are like...
Depends on where you live.
These are like cars that were the top end of the Saab line in the mid-size Saab, so they competed with like the M3 series, right? Or
yeah, they were super quick.
The A4. RS4, there we go.
Yeah, there you go.
Depending on which one you're talking about.
Well, they were produced between 1999 and 2002, and that's the Vegan, the Vigan.
Vigan.
And the Aero V6 was produced between 2006 and 2010.
So did Wheeler Dealers did a Vigan, and you know what Vigan means?
Vigan?
Yeah, Vigan. You know what it means in
bigger
Swedish?
Than small?
No, it means lightning bolt.
Oh, Vigan. Oh, you mean Vigan. I thought you said Vigan.
Yeah, it means lightning bolt. That, according to Wheeler Dealers, it means lightning bolt. So,
which makes sense from an aircraft company who's terrified of lightning bolts hitting them as they're flying.
It sounds really, you know, if it would have been me, Saab, I would have gone with lightning bolt. Vigan sounds a little too much like
the
vegan.
Yeah, it actually would sound pretty cool. But yeah, well, you know, Americans get confused, as do I, with simple names. I still can't pronounce a couple names from Suzuki.
Now the Vigan goes from like 6 to 10, and the Aero goes from 6 to 12.
Which are good prices for a vehicle that will be collectible. And the reason why we know it will be is because Saab is gone.
Yeah, so the first one, I think the Vigan was still built under Saab ownership. And of
it
course,
was.
The Aero was built under GM ownership.
Exactly. And the thing is that, you know, there are a lot of people who are really upset with GM for what they feel is torpedoing Saab and its uniqueness. And that may be true. But their cars were a little bit more affordable, a little bit easier to acquire. And for some of you guys out there who don't care about the difference, it might be a really cheap way to get into this type of collection.
Now, we just bought a 900 Turbo convertible, and we're figuring out a lot of things about Saab. We're figuring out that the engineering is really cool, right?
It's and weird and difficult.
And weird and difficult and expensive. So it's got what do you call that? Not a horizontally mounted engine, but a...
reverse mounted engine?
Yeah.
It's backwards.
Yeah, the engine's backwards, so the fan and all the stuff that lives on it faces a firewall.
Yeah.
And then it's front wheel drive, but there's this funky differential that transfers the engine obviously spins this way, right? It's a straight.
Right.
Right, but then you somehow
it's
have
an
to
inline.
Yeah, it's an inline, not mounted across, which is the way that most cars are done, right? So that the drive shafts go right into the engine.
Right.
Longitudinally, it's mounted. And then you have to have this funky differential that takes that.
It's like a transfer case almost, where it actually has to take the power and switch it around in order to get it out to the wheels properly. And it was remarkably unique. And that car has lots of interesting problems, including the longest wait you will ever have between pressing on the accelerator and having the turbocharger kick in.
It's got horrendous turbo drag.
It's like 3 seconds.
Yeah, it's horrendous.
You put your foot down and you can count to three and then you get that thing to kick in. Torque steer is really bad. The one we have is an automatic, and because of that, it's not a savage to drive. You drive the manual transmission one, you can put some hair on your chest. I tell you that.
Yeah. So cool cars, expensive to work on, and hard to get parts for, especially ours, the 900 Turbo. They're old enough now where it's getting tricky. And all the mechanics who used to know all the tricks on how to work on them are actually slowly, retiring.
Dead. Gone. I mean,
No. They're making their way to Valhalla.
that's a much more politically correct way of putting it.
All right, number four, Nathan.
Number four is one of the most beautiful cars that is currently being built.
Yes, this
is not a debate.
Years produced, 2018 to present.
It is absolutely just stunning.
The Lexus LC convertible.
It's both the LC and the convertible. The coupe and the convertible.
Yeah.
We're predicting that those will be collectible because they're freaking gorgeous.
And no one's buying them for some reason.
Well, because nobody's buying, I think it's COVID, and nobody's buying sports cars or anything else.
They're the last of the big V8s, right? Because Toyota still has a lot of credits that they can apply because they build a lot of hybrids, so they can keep building V8s.
Right.
Right now they're going for anywhere from 75 to 110 for the coupe or 101 and up for the convertible. But Nathan, I mean, you know, just a car that oozes sex appeal and like style and panache.
I could drive that car, even though I don't fit very well in it, honestly. I could drive that car for the rest of my life and feel like I'm a movie star or a rock star or something like that. And one with taste. Because it's not as ostentatious as some of the, you know, the Italian cars, you know, Lamborghini, Ferrari. But at the same time, it turns heads.
Yeah, look, it's I think it's like 400 horsepower, which, you know.
It's okay.
Yeah, 400 horsepower is yesterday's 300, but tomorrow's 500. So it's okay. If you're buying it for sheer performance, you're probably better off. They're a lot faster cars, a lot quicker cars, a lot of cars that
handle
better.
This is not a performance car. No. This is a grand touring vehicle that is
This is a car
reliable.
to be seen in.
To be seen in, and also to be seen in 10 years from now, where you don't have to mortgage your second mansion to fix it.
Yeah, this is a car where you pull up to the restaurant and the valet's like, I'm going to park that one.
Yeah, and it is the most beautiful Japanese car currently being built. It's right up there with some other products that were back in the 60s, you know, GT2000 and whatnot. But, oh my God, what a gorgeous car. And the yellow one?
Yeah, we had here.
Yellow doesn't always work on cars, but boy, does it work on that car.
All right, number three is another Toyota product. And this is an odd one, but there's a good story behind it. We actually got to drive it in a funky way. It's the Toyota RAV4, the second generation, that was built from 2012 to 2014. And what makes it unusual, Nathan?
Oh, it's terrible.
It was built in conjunction with Tesla.
Tesla, Elon Musk, and Toyota actually had lunch.
Mr. Toyota.
Yeah, most likely a drunken lunch, or in Elon's case, God only knows. But the point is that they sat down, they had lunch, and...
In Nathan's opinion, let's just...
Elon said, you know, in his pleasant way, man, I think I have something for you. And what he did was he convinced Toyota to use his powertrain in their
RAV4. And charge them through the nose for it.
And charge them a ridiculous amount, which we'll never know the full extent of how much.
Basically, Toyota sold these cars at a loss.
Oh, every single one was a loss. And the thing is that you would think that, okay, well, Tesla powertrain is really good. It wasn't so good in this vehicle.
But it was one of the first crossovers to actually be fully electric.
But it was not an all-wheel drive crossover.
No, that was weird.
It was front-wheel drive. Yeah.
103 miles of range. Today they're going for about 15K if you can find one. They're very rare. And we actually got to test drive it. Where were we?
We were in Arizona.
In the desert.
Oh, my God. That was so funny because the long story short.
We had a PR person with us.
PR people.
Yeah.
And
they wouldn't let us like trust us. So they were like, can we go with you? And we're like, you're not going to want to do this. It's really boring.
We threw him out. But we actually got him out of the car and left
like
him in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
And we went driving back and forth and back, and we're like waving as we drove by because we wanted to film a video without a bunch of people sitting in the car talking, and one particular one looking really pissed off.
Yeah, well, basically, video production is a lot of hurry up and wait, right?
Yeah.
Just driving back and forth or in front of the camera, getting different angles. And, you know, we said, you're not going to enjoy this. This is not very sexy. And, you know, they stood in the 100-degree sun waiting for us to get done, and it takes a long time. So that was actually pretty funny.
It was hysterical is what it was.
Because you know, we're like, hey, we try to warn you.
Well, yeah, and we're a video company, so it's not, and we can't have people in the car when we're driving and talking about the car.
You can have like a third person while we're reviewing it, sitting in the back there.
Especially somebody who can't add to the video, which is what you guys want to see.
Looking at the press release saying, no.
Yeah, we wanted to get a chance to feel it, and we did. And we drove it around, and you know what's really funny? We actually did that at the RAV4 launch for the next generation RAV4.
Yeah.
Remember? It was, to say that it was an uninspiring drive. Everything great about EVs, the immediate torque and the, you know, the power, it just didn't really have anything like that. So the one thing it does have is a lot of good storage space. They made some decent space despite the batteries. But otherwise, it really wasn't much of a vehicle. I kept thinking the Nissan Leaf is just as good as this.
One of the first crossovers, right? True crossover. It's a RAV4. And it's got the dubious distinction of having some of Toyota's lowest like reliability ratings ever. So,
that's the other thing.
To do with an all-electric car.
It really is, and that's the thing, guys. If you're considering this, make sure you look at the service bulletins. Make sure you know exactly what you're getting into, because it is extremely expensive to service some of these components.
Yeah. All right, number two, Dathan, is the Dodge Viper and Viper ACR, built from 2008 to 10 and then 2015 to 17. Basically the last generation Viper. And, you know, why is it special? Well, ultra low volume. How much are they going for right now? They're going for like 115,000 still. Or up to 200. The AC.
These are the ACRs that are going for that.
Yeah, the ACR probably never came down. So basically, what Dodge figured out was, well, the biggest problem with them was you can only get them in a manual.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with that unless you're like a rich old dude who wants a sports car but can't drive a manual anymore.
I don't want to put it in any gear. I just want to just put my foot down and go.
Which is the demographic for this, right?
Yeah, a lot of people who. Yeah.
I mean, those stupid rich bloggers were buying them, but outside of that, it was old dudes, and they were kind of not willing to shift their own gear. At least some. I shouldn't speak to all of them, but it certainly made it a lot less attractive to a lot of people. And then finally, they figured out that what this thing was really good for was like breaking track records, right? They
put
this big wing on it,
monster,
big air dam in the front. It was a monster, and they went around the country and broke every record at every American racetrack, and that's the ACR. And it's just a pure out sports car. But it was, you know, my issue with it was, and Ralph, who designed this, Ralph Giles, if you're listening, you know, I think we've talked about this in person. FCA had just purchased Dodge, right? And FCA owned, as part of their corporate structure, Ferrari, so they had access to Ferrari, like, seats and designers and such, and he tried to make it like an American Ferrari, and I always thought it should be the exact opposite, right? It should be American Harley, not the American Ferrari.
I am so sorry, you're so wrong. I understand. Roman and I have a very different point.
I did not
of
like
view.
That car, Nathan.
No, you didn't. You didn't
I hated
fit very
it with
well.
A burning passion.
Yeah, you did.
I put my hand in it. Here's what happened. I stuck my hand. I sat down in the car for the first time. I stuck my hand in to move the seat back because I could not drive it without actually looking like my mom, right? Because I couldn't see over the top of the A-pillar, right? I had to drive it like this. So I wanted to move the seat back. There's a piece of plastic trim that like tore into my skin. And so now I'm sitting in the car with blood gushing out of my hand. Because I tried to change the seat, right? And then like my feet are 20 degrees hotter than my head because you've got the side pipes that are, you know, and yeah, that's like an American Harley, but come on, just, you know, it shouldn't bite you that hard.
Okay, and then the difference here is that I had nothing but pleasurable experiences driving it and pounding one around a track so hard that I've never spun a car more than once in terms of like, you know, testing it on a track, never. This car spun three times. Well, it wants to kill you, and that makes it a really good car.
It was also the time I realized I was a real truck. I was a truck guy because I was driving it on the program. We were in San Francisco. It was pissing down. I mean, pissing down rain. And all of a sudden, there's just like explosions. Like a poof. And I thought somebody had actually shot at us. I thought they saw the Viper and decided to take a pot shot at it because the rear glass exploded. Come to find out later that was like a problem with the early pre-production models, right? The glass would explode. And there's a guy in a, you know, since we're filming, there's a guy in a power wagon behind us, and he pulls up and he says, hey, you know, we need to fix this thing because we're going to the track and we don't want, you know, rain falling into it, which was happening. You want to take the power wagon back and then we'll give it back to you at the track. I said, hell yeah. Got in the power wagon. I was like, this is my vehicle. You know, given the choice between a Viper and I will take a Power Wagon every day. So, plenty of room. I could see over things.
Yeah.
Cup holders.
It's a difficult argument for me to take up, except you can use a Power Wagon to tow a Viper on a trailer, and then you'll have double bliss, which I highly recommend. I loved the Viper. I loved every version of the Viper. I loved how insane it was, how ridiculous it was, how manly it was, how hard it was to drive fast. But if you could drive it fast, that meant that A, you knew what you were doing, or B, you just were too stupid to understand what safety actually meant. I've seen people take those things on the track and absolutely shred anything nearby, Corvettes, Ferraris, you name it. They're really, really ridiculous. But I do agree that they're also very primitive and not up to Roman standards. But you can buy one for a lot less than what we mentioned here. This is the ACR prices, and those are the track versions.
So, So I get to the track, it's pissing down rain. FCA does this come to God talk with us. We'll let you on the track, but we're going to have to put like a race car driver because Sears Point has a lot of elevation changes, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you start up and you go up this big hill and you come down. And look, dude, you know, I'm not a race car driver. I don't pretend to be one. There's nothing to be learned from me going quickly in a Viper except that I will be the first person to put it into the wall and have 200 other journalists tweet my face and the crash car around the world. So I get in the car and there's this guy who's like this French dude, and the first thing he says to me, race car driver, he's, I used to ice with Anton Senna. I'm like, good for you, dude, right? Yeah. And so I'm babying this thing around Sears Point because there's standing water. You remember, I don't know if you saw the video, but there was a lake at the bottom of the racetrack, in the racetrack, right? They actually, it could have been a boat down there. And so I'm babying it around. He's like, go faster, go faster. I'm like, there is nothing to be learned by me going faster. And then I hit a cone and they kicked me out of the car.
Yeah, it's no fair because you had an angry Frenchman in the car with you. When I drove one, I had an absolutely amazing Brazilian in the car with me, a male.
What was
and
your name?
It was a really good experience. I got to drive one around Austin, the big motor speedway there.
Oh,
and
Coda.
Circuit
of the Americas.
Yeah, Circuit of the Americas.
Well, that's a better track for it.
It's a way better track.
It's a high speed track.
Oh, my God. I got to open that thing up. And I got to do the same thing in a Jeep SRT8. That's a whole different story. But let's continue because the next vehicle is one I think Roman and I will both agree on in terms of it being a missed opportunity and it's a mystery as well.
Yeah, so our number one vehicle is the Chevy.
The number one, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the Chevy SS produced from 2014 to 2017. Obviously, it started life out as a Holden, right? Where it did really well in Australia. It was like the ultimate Holden there. Right now they're going for pretty good money, according to this, $35,000 to $45,000. But let's talk about why it didn't work. I mean, it had the big Corvette LS under the hood.
Well, it was an option. And you could get a manual.
It was basically, it was kind of like they had that M3 Magic. It could be a family car or it could be a balls out, tire burning, burnout, producing monster.
Now, I've had an opportunity to drive all the different G8s that Pontiac built, and it's the same car, basically, or a very similar car.
The Pontiac GTO.
Yeah. Well, no, but the G8 came after the GTO, and it was a much bigger vehicle, actually. And the GXP was their big engine with the manual transmission, and that basically worked its way over to the Chevy SS. Now, here's the thing about it.
Well, Pontiac was still...
Well, the Pontiac went away. But the thing is that Chevrolet, for some reason, and this is the mystery, never promoted this vehicle. Never. We got one.
Yeah.
The older one, too, not the one.
Yeah, it was like they didn't want it or something. It was weird.
They just didn't care about it. I asked them about it, and they would just smile and shake their heads. They never had a commercial with this vehicle.
We never saw commercials or
nothing online. No billboards, nothing real. I mean, maybe in Detroit, but the point is that this car was just like an unloved stepchild that they never really wanted to invest any time or money into, and it's a shame.
And the other problem with it was the Holden looks kind of badass. This thing they kind of made, I don't know what they did, but they didn't make it look as fire-breathing as I think it should have, right? This should have been like GM's version of a Charger.
I agree, and the Pontiac, when it was out, looked a little bit more the part. It definitely looked a little bit more aggressive, and the thing is that for some reason, whoever was at Chevy at the time, who was in charge of design, was just like, no. We want it to be as mellow-looking as possible.
Yeah.
Just maybe to be a sleeper.
Bunch of chrome. Yeah, it was this ultimate sleeper.
It didn't feel like a sleeper either.
No, it drove like a badass.
Oh, it was
bad out of hell, dude. But
and they handled great. They were brilliant cars. And the interior was decent. Nothing special. But it was comfortable, and it was a big car. It was a spiritual successor to the Caprice. But a much more advanced vehicle, much more driver-centric vehicle. And yes, the Impala that came out later, they did have the Caprice Pursuit or whatever that went to the police department that actually, there are a few still around.
So Zach wrote up this list. He said they're going from 35 to 45. I'm not sure about that. That seems like that's how much they were when they were newish. I think they probably depreciated. I've seen them for much cheaper than that.
I've seen them for a lot cheaper than that.
I think
well.
You guys can get them a lot cheaper. So don't,
I think
don't,
20 would be realistic.
Yeah, don't take that. I think that was maybe a misprint here.
Zach was really sick when he wrote this. The thing is that those cars, I feel, are really underappreciated, and in time, already you're seeing it with the G8 and the GXP version of it, that these cars are becoming more and more sought after by people who realize this is a great American car, because technically it is American, that I can tune and make into an absolute BMW killer, and at the same time maintain an individualistic identity.
All right, and we get a bonus, and this is a bonus that I put in, not Nathan,
because he... You in this car.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's a guilty pleasure. It's the Cadillac ELR, produced from 2014 to 2016. It's a giant, colossal flop for GM, because basically they took the Volt, not the Bolt, the Volt.
The first generation Volt too.
Yeah, and then they re-jiggered it, re-engineered it, chassis shared it, and made it into a Cadillac.
Yeah.
Right now they're anywhere between, I think this is right, 18 to 27.
That sounds a little bit more, yeah.
One third when they cost new, and that was really the problem, right? Remember how much those like a Volt at that time was going for like 40K or something, right?
At the most, yeah. And then
guess how much this cost?
Like
double that.
60.
No, double. They were up to 80, dude.
80 grand. Yeah. And the thing is that the underpinnings are basically a Bolt.
Yeah.
So what you were paying for was a really nice look, and when they were pretty,
really nice.
They were really good looking cars on the outside, but really it wasn't much more than a Bolt underneath.
A Bolt.
Yeah. Volt.
Volt, yeah, not Volt.
Sorry, the V, Volt. Yeah,
you're putting it into an all-electric. It was a hybrid, right?
So the hybrid.
Volt had, like, I think, like 40 miles of range in the ELR.
Yeah, the plug-in hybrid.
Yeah,
But it was basically the same system
of as all-electric range, I should say. What I loved about it was it had these doors that just, like, you know, beautiful pair of legs went on forever, right? These were like, you could not park that thing in any parking space because the door would be about 2 acres long.
Well, and that was one of the big differences. This was a two-door.
Yes, it was a two-door.
Whereas in the Volt is a four-door.
Right.
Yeah, so
right.
That was one of the major differences design-wise.
Beautiful interior. I mean, like, GM really put a lot of time and effort into making this, you know, the Cadillac of my dreams. I love the styling on the outside. It wasn't very quick. I mean, let's face it, you know, the gas engine wasn't very powerful.
No.
The battery wasn't very powerful. It was kind of a, you know, it was one of, the problem with, look, a hybrid, I think, Nathan, is it's the worst of both worlds, right? You're carrying around both an engine and a motor.
Right.
Why? So it makes it heavy. It makes it
more complex.
More complex.
And,
You know. We were just talking about getting maybe an i3 for a long-term review, but you said something that's true. Why do you want both those? Why do you want the problems with the maintenance on a motor and batteries and an engine and transmission? You know, all that. And that was the problem with this. It was just too complicated, but just sexy. There's a candy apple red that I still lust after.
We're probably going to see one of those in the studio in the next couple of years, because I have a feeling Roman will not be able to
resist. It's going to come down more.
Uh-huh.
It's going to come down more.
It'll come down $1,000, and also Roman's like, yeah, I got one! The thing is that, honestly, there was one more thing about that car. I did drive one.
Yeah.
And it drove really nice.
Yeah.
They revised the suspension, so it was a much more compliant.
Yeah, much more Cadillac-like.
You know, Cadillac. Yeah. So it was kind of floaty. And it handled pretty good, but it wouldn't get out of its own way compared to other Cadillac components.
It was slow, yeah. It was slow.
Yeah,
that Volt is a much, you compare the two, it's a much smaller car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same drivetrain.
Yeah, exactly. And I think at the end of the day, the reason why people just absolutely did not buy it, and they didn't. It was
too expensive.
It's just too bloody pricey for what you're getting.
Yeah.
And most people who are buying a Cadillac, they're not idiots. I mean, they understand, well, this is basically a Chevy with a, you know, bad sharing.
Yeah, imagine if you had like two Apples, right? A Red Delicious and a Granny Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Delicious was $2 and the Granny Smith was $4. You're like, I'll just take the Red Delicious.
Right. Well, and then that's exactly it. Yeah. And the other side of it is, it just didn't appeal to that audience. At the time, I think that their timing was off and they weren't able to really get that audience that they can probably get now in terms of getting a plug-in hybrid that, you know, is kind of fashionable. It's a much different world right now. I mean, it was only a couple of years ago that they built this car.
Yeah.
But a lot of things have changed since then.
I mean, look, they could have made it all electric even back then, right? GM had an all electric car 20 years ago. They could have made this all electric.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But once again, it's a guilty pleasure for me. I just love the car. The problem with it is exactly what you said. Every time I think about seriously buying one, I'm like, what do I do with it? It's not a great electric car. It's not a great gas car.
No, it's not. It doesn't do anything particularly well. It's just...
It just looks really good in my eyes.
Yeah, it looks really good. And that counts for a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's the prom queen of cars. It's shallow on the inside, but it's beautiful on the outside.
So let us know in the comments below what other cars you think are future collectibles. I'm sure we missed a whole bunch.
Be reasonable about this, guys. You know, we're talking about somewhat recent cars.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, not, you know, BMW 2002, you know.
Yeah, we know.
Porsche 911 air cooled.
Yeah. We get it. Yeah.
We get it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is a little trickier, right? You have to come up with like cars from the last 10 years that 30 years from now are actually going to be the BMW 2002, right?
Right. And there are plenty of other cars out there. And notice we didn't add any pickup trucks to this. And that's because pickup trucks inherently cannot be collectible because we're too busy out there breaking them.
No, it's because we're talking cars, not trucks.
That's another reason why they are inherently unstable for this particular video show.
All right, guys. Remember, go back to TFLcar.com. If you're listening to this as a podcast and you want to look at these cars, go over to our TFL Talk YouTube channel where we actually have pictures or video of these cars. And thank you for joining us for another episode. Thanks for sitting in for Tommy, Nathan.
Oh, my pleasure. Guys, take care of yourselves. We'll see you next time.
Ciao.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.